जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद Today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 2, Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're continuing with Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's explanation of his own Mangalacharana. As you know, in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are some 14 or so verses in Sanskrit, beautiful verses describing the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he has been explaining the significance of the third verse, which deserves repeating. Yadadvaitam brahmopanishadi tarapyasya danubha ya atman tarhyami purusha iti syosyamsha vibhavaha shad aishwarya purno ya iha bhagavan sa swayamayam na chaitanyat krishna jagati paratatvam paramiha. That means what the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body, and the Lord known as the Supersoul is but his localized plenary portion. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself, full with six opulences. He is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. So we've been hearing about the nature of the Lord's Brahma Jyoti, and we're continuing with that description. Then he will describe Paramatma, because these are the three things mentioned in that verse, as we heard yesterday, off of Srimad Bhagavatam. Varanti tattvatva vidas tattvam yajnana advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. The Lord is realized as the impersonal Brahman, as the localized Paramatma, or as the Supreme Person. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is all three of them, but he is the complete Purna Bhagavan himself. So today we're quoting from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, Munayo vata vasanaha shramana urhvavanthinaha brahmakhyam dhamate te yanti shanta sannyasino malaha. Naked saints and sannyasis who undergo strict, severe physical penances, who can raise the semen to the brain, and who are completely equipoised in Brahman, can live in the realm known as Brahmaloka. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. In this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.6.47, Vata-vasanaha refers to mendicants who do not care about anything material, including clothing, but who depend wholly on nature. Such sages do not cover their bodies even in severe winter or scorching sunshine. They take great pains not to avoid any kind of bodily suffering, and they live by begging from door to door. They never discharge their semen, either knowingly or unknowingly. By such celibacy, they are able to raise the semen to the brain. Thus they become most intelligent and can develop very sharp memories. Their minds are never disturbed or diverted from contemplation on the absolute truth, nor are they ever contaminated by desire for material enjoyment. By practicing austerities under strict discipline, such mendicants attain a neutral state transcendental to the modes of nature and merge into the impersonal Brahman. We'll just say a few things before going on here. Om Jnana Timarantasya Jnananjanya Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripata Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinataranam. This verse, it reminds me of something Srila Prabhupada said. I don't remember the details, maybe someone else does. There was some sort of a gathering of impersonalist yogi types that the devotees were also invited to go and speak at. So Srila Prabhupada had the devotees collect so many flyers that these Mayavadis were passing out that had so much impersonal philosophy on it. And they used these flyers to serve prasadam on. And Prabhupada said later on that this is the best use of their nonsense philosophy. So it reminds me of the context in which this particular verse was spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna was just about to leave the planet. He was about to finish his manifested pastimes in this material world, and he had called all the Yadavas to Prabhas, where they were to execute their ritualistic activities and ultimately fight each other to death, basically. Moshala Lila. Uddhava was Krishna's dear devotee. He was called Haridasa. There are three Haridasas. Does anybody know who they are? Three Haridasas in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One is Haridasa Vardhya. That's Giriraj Govardhan. He's the best of all the Haridasas. The other one is Maharaj Yudhishthir. And the third one is Uddhava. So Uddhava is Haridas. He's a great devotee of Lord Krishna. So he was intelligent, and he was able to understand what the Lord's plan was. So he came to the Lord, and he found him sitting beneath a peepal tree, I think it was. And he said, I think that you're going to wind up your pastimes in this world. And he said, I don't think I can handle that. We can't live without you. Tell us, let me go with you at least. He was a little bit upset about this. So this is one of the verses that he was mentioning in that context. And just before this, he actually told Krishna that we can conquer over the material energy just by taking your remnants of your foodstuffs, the cloths that you used to wear, the garlands that you previously wore. In other words, by taking your prasadam. So similarly, devotees, they don't have to undergo all these austerities that the Mayavadis and the yogis undergo simply by taking Krishna's prasadam, Krishna's grace. They can similarly transcend all the influence of the material modes of nature. Whereas the Mayavadis, the impersonalists in general, they, despite all of their strict disciplines and austerities, and their attaining a neutral state transcendental to the modes of nature, here Srila Prabhupada writes, they may not stay in the impersonal realization for very long. They may be impelled one way or the other. Either they get the mercy of a devotee and can move up into transcendental duality, or they can eventually become distracted and fall down back into material duality. But everyone is going to be conditioned by some sort of duality. So the devotees, recognizing this, they embrace duality, but in a selfless spirit. It's described elsewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakale ashanto Krishna bhakta nishkama ataibo shanto. That the devotee doesn't have any personal desire, even though he is absorbed in desire. He's absorbed in duality. He's absorbed in activities. But none of it is for himself, which is to say, none of it is for the false ego. Therefore, he can sustain his position of transcendence, even while engaged in so many activities. That's actually what's taught in the Bhagavad Gita. So let's continue with what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says here. Atmantarjami jane yoga shastre koi. Sheho Govinda Angsha Vibhuti Jehoi. He who is described in the Yoga Shastras as the indwelling supersoul, Atma Antaryami, is also a plenary portion of Govinda's personal expansion. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is by nature joyful. His enjoyments or pastimes are completely transcendental. He is in the fourth dimension of existence. For although the material world is measured by the limitations of length, breadth, and height, the Supreme Lord is completely unlimited in His body, form, and existence. He is not personally attached to any of the affairs within the material cosmos. What does Srila Prabhupada mean when he says that the Lord is in the fourth dimension of existence? Does anybody understand this? What is the fourth dimension of existence? Spiritual? Okay. The what? Spiritual world? Bhrigupati Puru? Okay. I think this is coming from the Upanishads. And Gopi Pranatana Puru, you may have a better idea about this, but is it in the Mandukya Upanishad? The four avasthas are mentioned. You have I'm sorry? Aitreya, okay. There are four avasthas, they're called. States of consciousness that we're always in. One of them is jagriti, that's waking consciousness. That's our ordinary conditional consciousness in this material world. And then there's swapna, which is our dream state, sleeping state, ordinary sleep. And then there's sushupti, which is deep sleep, dreamless sleep. And then finally there's turiya. Turiya means it's a state transcendental to all of these. Still conscious, but neither awake nor asleep nor dreaming. Transcendental consciousness. It seems to me that's what Srila Prabhupada is referring to. Because he's emphasizing the fact that the Lord's pastimes are completely transcendental. And of course that's consistent with both the other answers that these Prabhus have given. So, the material world is created by the expansion of his Purusha avatars, who direct the aggregate material energy and all the conditioned souls. By understanding the three expansions of the Purusha, a living entity can transcend the position of knowing only the 24 elements of the material world. In other words, in this material conditional consciousness, particularly in this jagriti consciousness, waking consciousness, we are perceiving basically some sort of combinations and permutations of 24 elements at all times. Sankhya philosophy, in fact, Sankhya means to count. It's counting all these different elements, and it's by process of elimination deciding which ones are extrinsic to us, which ones we don't belong to. And by that process of analysis, it is hoped that one becomes transcendental. Just as the previous verse mentions the vata vasanas. What does vata vasana mean? Somebody who's dressed with vata. Somebody who's dressed with the air only. They also call them digambaras sometimes, Jains. So the munis who are brahmavadis, shramanas, it's also said. So the yogis, this verse, now we've finished talking about the Brahma Jyoti and the Lord's identity and the nature of that Brahman realization on that level. And now we're talking about the indwelling supersoul, Atma Antaryami, Paramatman, Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. Now Srila Prabhupada makes a very strong statement here. He says the material world is created by the expansion of the Purusha avatars, who direct the aggregate material energy and all the conditioned souls. So the Purusha avatars, these three forms of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and Karanodakshayi Vishnu, they play a very important function. And particularly the Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, because he is the Paramatman within everyone's heart, and he is the source of all the Vishnu incarnations within this material world. So, directly or indirectly, this Purusha is directing the aggregate material energy and all the conditioned souls within it. So, by understanding the three expansions of the Purusha, a living entity can transcend the position of knowing only the 24 elements of the material world. One of the expansions of Mahavishnu is Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, the super soul within every living entity. Why don't we all turn our cell phones off, including me? The super soul within every living entity. As the super soul of the total aggregate of living entities, or the second Purusha, he is known as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. As the creator of the original cause of innumerable universes, or the first Purusha, who is lying down on the causal ocean, he is called Mahavishnu. So we're going backwards from Kshirodakshayi Vishnu Paramatma to Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, then to Karanodakshayi Vishnu, otherwise known as Mahavishnu. These, the three Purushas, direct the affairs of the material world. Andantarastha Panamanu Chayantarastham. The Lord is all-pervading within this material world in the form of the super soul within the hearts of all living entities, even within the atom, Srila Prabhupada often says. So the authorized scriptures direct the condition, the individual souls to revive their relationship with the super soul. Indeed, the system of yoga is the process of transcending the influence of the material elements by establishing a connection with the Purusha known as Paramatma. So, I mentioned the other day, we have in classical Indian philosophy is divided into six, and those can be grouped into three. We have Nyaya and Vaisheshika together, dealing with logic mainly, and atomism. We have Purva and Uttara Mimamsa, that is to say Karma Mimamsa philosophy and Vedanta, those go together as well. And here we have Sankhya and Yoga, those also go together. Sankhya is the principle of extricating oneself from the material world by analyzing all of the constituent elements of this world and realizing that we do not actually belong to any one of them. It's, you might say it's an elaborate process of what Prabhupada used to say to children. He told Gurudas's daughter, Saraswati, Shamsundar. He told Saraswati, he said, point to your nose. So she did this. Point to your ears. She did this. Point to your feet. She pointed to her feet. Now point to yourself. And she was stumped. So Sankhya philosophy is like that. We're trying to find out everything that we're not, neti neti, as the Upanishads say. And by doing that, then we can get some glimpse of who we are. This is the yoga system. This is a program of Sankhya. And then yoga, if Sankhya is the theory, then yoga is the application. Yoga is the lab, you might say. Like when you go to college, you have your class and then you have your lab. You have to apply what you've heard. So yoga does that, and there are many different kinds of yoga. Sometimes we say even bhakti is a kind of yoga. But here's the important thing here, is that Prabhupada says, the system of yoga is a process of transcending the influence of material elements, that's Sankhya, by establishing a connection with the Purusha known as Paramatma. That is the yoga. Connection. Yoga means connection. My godbrother Garuda Prabhu has written, has translated Bhagavad Gita for academic and lay audiences, and he has made some comments there, and he has his central thesis of his Bhagavad Gita commentary is that it's revolving around this concept of yoga. Yoga comes from the Sanskrit verbal root yuj, which means to connect, to link, as Prabhupada says. So that connection, or union, he uses the word, is there for any manifestation of transcendental endeavor, but especially there in bhakti yoga, because the union is the most direct and most intense and confidential in bhakti, only in bhakti. The others have this or that kind of yoga. It's a kind of connection also. Here we see meditating on the Paramatma is a kind of a connection with the Supreme Lord. But it is not with Bhagavan, it is with his Paramatma feature. Still, it's a connection. So one who has thoroughly studied the intricacies of creation can know very easily that this Paramatma is the plenary portion of the Supreme Being, Sri Krishna. This is the argument that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is ultimately getting at. We've already been through the Brahman and the Brahma Jyoti. Now we're talking about Paramatma. So let's continue. He says, Ananta Svatike Jai Che Eka Surya Bhashe Tai Che Jivet Govindhera Amsha Prakashe. As the one sun appears reflected in countless jewels, so Govinda manifests himself as the Paramatma in the hearts of all living beings. Purport. The sun is situated in a specific location, but is reflected in countless jewels and appears in innumerable localized aspects. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although eternally present in his transcendental abode, Golok Vrindavan, is reflected in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. In the Upanishads, it is said that the Jiva living entity and the Paramatma or Supersoul are like two birds sitting in the same tree. Which Upanishad is that? Dvausuparnao? Anybody know? I don't know either. Sorry?
It's quoted, I think, at least two or three times.
Yeah.
Actually, originally comes from the Rigveda.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. When we read Bhagavad Gita, sometimes we can trace, there's a particular statement that Krishna makes, which is basically paraphrasing the Upanishads. And sometimes the Upanishads themselves are paraphrasing the Shruti Mantra, the Rig Vedas, or one of the original four Vedas. So this is a verse that actually appears in several Upanishads. Nice analogy, two birds sitting on the same tree. So the Supersoul engages the living being in executing fruitive work as a result of his deeds in the past. But the Paramatma has nothing to do with such engagements. This is interesting, isn't it? Let me read that again. The Supersoul engages the living being in executing fruitive work as a result of his deeds in the past. But the Paramatma has nothing to do with such engagements. So he's engaging us, but he has nothing to do with that engagement. He's engaging us by supplying us the intelligence that we desire to perform the activities that we want to perform. And as he's keeping score of everything that we're doing, so that when we die, there's a record of it. If everyone else fails, Paramatman doesn't fail. He knows what we've done, etc. So as soon as the living being ceases to act in terms of fruitive work and takes to the service of the Lord, the Paramatma, coming to know of his supremacy, he is immediately freed from all designations, and in that pure state, he enters the kingdom of God, known as Vaikuntha. The Paramatma, or Supersoul, the guide of the individual living beings, does not take part in fulfilling the desires of the living beings, but he arranges for their fulfillment by material nature. Another important point. I'll read it again. The Paramatma, or Supersoul, the guide of the individual living beings, does not take part in fulfilling the desires of the living beings, but he arranges for their fulfillment by material nature. As soon as an individual soul becomes conscious of his eternal relationship with the Supersoul and looks only toward him, he at once becomes free from the entanglements of material enjoyment. Christian philosophers who do not believe in the law of karma put forward the argument that it is absurd to say that one must accept the results of past deeds of which he has no consciousness. A criminal is first reminded of his misdeeds by witnesses in a law court, and then he is punished. If death is complete forgetfulness, why should a person be punished for his past misdeeds? The conception of the Paramatma is an invincible answer to these fallacious arguments. Actually, we know from Srimad Bhagavatam that there are others, not just the Paramatma. There are others who are witnessing what we do, especially nowadays. Do you know what I mean? There are cameras everywhere. But there are also 13 witnesses to all of our activities that are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But we know demigods also may fail sometimes. Sometimes they mess up. But Paramatma does not mess up. Therefore, Prabhupada says this is an invincible answer. The Paramatma is the witness of the past activities of the individual living being. A man may not remember what he has done in his childhood, but his father, who has seen him grow through different stages of development, certainly remembers. Similarly, the living being undergoes many changes of body through many lives, but the super soul is always with him and remembers all his activities, despite his evolution through different bodies. What does evolution mean? It means our consciousness changes. We're no longer in the same space that we were in when we performed that activity. But we nonetheless perform that activity, and the Lord remembers. After the Damodar-Damabandhan Lila in the 10th canto, when the sons of Kuvera were praying to Lord Damodar, he's described as Sarvakshetra-Vikara-Vit. Sarvakshetra-Vikara-Vit. He knows all the changes of all the kshetras. What is a kshetra? Your field of activities. What's a field of activities? What comprises our field of activities? Body is one part of it. What else? Yeah, senses are a part of the body. What else? The whole state of our conditional existence, we can say in simple terms. This is our field of activity. All the stuff with which we're working, all the facility that we have as an embodied living being. That kshetra may change throughout many eons. And we forget. This is something Krishna told Arjuna early on in the Gita. But Krishna doesn't forget. So, let's go on. Athava bahunaitena kim jnatena tavarjuna vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekam shena sthito jagat. The personality of God, Sri Krishna, said, "What more shall I say to you? I live throughout this cosmic manifestation merely by my single plenary portion." This is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quoting from Bhagavad Gita 10:42, purport. Describing his own potency to Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna spoke this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, he's emphasizing the fact that Paramatman, the Lord, is all-pervading throughout his creation as Paramatman. And that verse implicitly refers to the Lord Paramatma. Tamimam ahamajam sharira bhajam hridi hridi dishtitam atma kalpitanam pratidrishamiva naikadharakam ekam samadhikatosmi vidhuta bheta mohaha. Grandfather Bhishma said, this is a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, "As the one sun appears differently situated according to different seers, so also do you, the unborn, appear differently represented as the Paramatma in every living being. But when a seer knows himself to be one of your own servitors, no longer does he maintain such duality. Thus, I am now able to comprehend your eternal forms, knowing well the Paramatma to be only your plenary portion." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.42 was spoken by Bhishma Deva, the grandfather of the Kurus, when he was lying on a bed of arrows at the last stage of his life. Arjuna, Krishna, and numberless friends admirers, relatives, and sages had gathered on the scene as Maharaj Yudhishthira took moral and religious instructions from the dying Bhishma. Just as the final moment arrived for him, Bhishma spoke this verse while looking at Lord Krishna. Just as the one sun is the object of vision of many different persons, so the one partial representation of Lord Krishna, who lives in the heart of every living entity as the Paramatma, is a variously perceived object. One who comes intimately in touch with Lord Krishna by engaging in his eternal service sees the Super Soul as the localized partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhishma knew the Super Soul to be a partial expansion of Lord Krishna, whom he understood to be the supreme, unborn, transcendental form. So we heard yesterday that one who is passionate, one whose intelligence is infected with passion, desire, that person will see the Super Soul as being different in different bodies. And he'll see different spirit souls as being different according to their bodies as well. But someone who has extricated himself from conditional consciousness, he will see the oneness, the qualitative oneness of all beings, and the qualitative and quantitative oneness of all Paramatma expansions within this mature world and within the hearts of all living beings. So this is concluding the section on the Paramatman. Finally, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami arrives at his real conclusion, which he then develops in the rest of the Mangalacharana verses to be explained further. He says, Shaito Govindo Sakshat Chaitanya Goshai Jiva Nishtariti Aiche Dayalu Arnai. That Govinda personally appears as Chaitanya Goshai. No other Lord is as merciful in delivering the fallen souls. Now there's a long, long purport here. What time is it?
I would prefer to leave that tomorrow and for a few minutes maybe you can say something about it before
you. Okay. So I'll just stop here because it's a nice shift. And today is the, did we say appearance or disappearance? A day of Madhavendra Puri. As you know, Madhavendra Puri is a great saint, revered in our line, revered in other Vaishnava lines as well, a very prominent personality in the Vallabhacharya Vaishnava Sampradaya as well. They say he was from South India, maybe Orissa, but he went to Govardhan, and he was, in fact, he manifested that deity there, the deity of Gopal, famous nowadays as Sri Govardhananathji, worshipped in Nathdwara, Rajasthan. That deity was originally worshipped by Madhavendra Puri. Maybe not originally worshipped by Madhavendra Puri, but at least he found that deity who was hidden in the bushes at Govardhan. And this Annakuta ceremony was celebrated with great pomp by Madhavendra Puri, who localized all the villagers to worship him on that day. There's a whole chapter here in Chaitanya Charitamrita that I won't summarize, but it describes Madhavendra Puri, all of his activities, his devotional service. We know he went, when he was in Orissa, he saw this Kirachara Gopinath deity, and he decided that maybe I can give some of this kheer that they're offering here to Gopal if I can find out how to make it. And then he felt a little bit ashamed because when something is offered to the deity, offered to Krishna, one should not think about eating that thing. But Madhavendra Puri, even though his desire was selfless, he was out of humility thinking he had committed some offense. And so he thought, I should just leave this place because I'm just an offender. Meanwhile, he was chanting his japa, and after the pujari put the deities to rest at night, then he saw that there's a pot of sweet rice missing. The sweet rice that he was offering to Kirachara Gopinath was missing, and the deity came to him and said, I've actually saved this for Madhavendra Puri, so you should go out and find him and give it to him. So this pujari went out and was calling throughout the Madhavendra Puri was chanting his rounds in a deserted marketplace at that time. And this pujari was calling his name and said, Gopinath, his deity has taken some kheer for you, please come. And Madhavendrapuri was so ecstatic at that gift from the Lord, who understood his desire to serve him. He went into ecstasy. He drank the kheer, and in fact he kept the pot and ate a little bit of that pot every day. Then later on he was to bring some chandan to the deity from Odisha also. That's a big endeavor. And Gopal came in the dream and told him, you do not have to take this chandan, such expensive thing also, because at every step of the way you have to pay taxes, and physically demanding because it's heavy to carry so much chandan. He said, you don't have to take it all the way to Govardhan. You just give it to me as Gopinath here in Remuna, and then everything will be okay. So Madhavendrapuri was considered to be the root of devotional service in ecstatic love, because before Madhavendrapuri, generally people didn't worship Radha and Krishna together. People worshipped either Lakshmi Narayana or Sita Ram or Krishna alone. But this Radha Krishna worship is mainly coming from Srila Madhavendrapuri. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had extreme regard for Madhavendrapuri, who is also his Paramaguru, and we worship him in that way as well. So I think we can stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments on any of this? Okay. One question. Balaram.
If that's the case, then how different or how much control does the Jivatma have in his future? If pretty much the super soul engages him in futuristic.
Okay, I read that statement twice in order to avoid the misconception that the Paramatma is engaging us in our sinful or pious activities, as the case may be. He is facilitating them, is maybe a better word. He facilitates it in the same way that... he facilitates our material desire by supplying us with all the necessities. He gives us all of the stuff with which we're working. The intelligence is being given by the Paramatman. The material elements are being given by the Paramatman. The external energy that we are embracing or trying to embrace right now is an energy of the Paramatman as well. It's all coming from him, as we heard yesterday. But the Lord himself, natasya kasyachit papam lokasya srijati prabhu. The Lord himself does not assume anyone's sinful or pious activities, and so in that sense, he's not engaged. This is why I read it twice, because it does seem to be contradictory unless we listen very carefully and consider the philosophical ramifications. So the Lord, as the Paramatma, is facilitating our desires, but he's not directly engaged in creating or perpetuating or encouraging those desires. Is that okay?
That's okay, because I'm asking it because sometimes the mind is triggered to be excited about making decisions, and they would jump into devotees would jump into conclusions. Oh, Krishna wants it this way.
Mm.
Krishna wants it that way. So the mental speculation. So I wanted to make it more precise, because then there's no blaming that, oh, when it doesn't work out, then they blame, oh, because Krishna wanted it that way too. So either way, that's why the quotation, everything is good. So, how do you limit, that
Well, there's a couple of things here. Number one, we can understand what Krishna wants by what Krishna says, and so we can determine that to the extent that it can be determined by reference to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. This is the instruction. Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, Vakya, Chiteti, Koriya, Aiko. We should not actually base our impression of what Krishna wants on anything other than that. However, even within that paradigm, there are some things that we simply can't know. And it's good to recognize that as well. Achintya khalu ye bhava natans tarkini yojiyat. So one should not argue, for example, that if you pass your test, or if you find a nice wife, or if you get the career that you wanted, or you win the lottery, that that's Krishna's mercy. It's not necessarily so. Krishna has much more important things that that he's absorbed in, such as the love of his devotees. Is that okay?
Yes.
Arjita Prabhu, you wanted to add something?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.